You are tuned to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs, and I'm your host, Brooke Kavanaugh. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources, your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center offering community space, events, gifts, tools for the revolution, a comprehensive collection of women's writings, and more, located at 3734 Southeast Hawthorne and on the web at inotherwords.org. Well, welcome to Bread and Roses, and tonight is a special end-of-the-year program, and I'm joined in the studio by a couple of friends who may or may not be speaking this evening. That remains to be seen, but they're here to give me moral support, which I appreciate. We're on the eve of the new year, and when we move into a new year, there's a lot of reflecting that goes on. We think about what we've done, what we haven't done, the troubles in the world and the community we live in, and whether next year will be better. And there's that feeling that comes with the new year that we get to start over, or that we can say, this is the year that I'm really going to make things happen. And there's this hope. So tonight we're going to hear from different women in the community about issues they're concerned about, issues they think need to be paid attention to, and also how we can bring about change. Later in the show, you'll be invited to call in and share your thoughts, talk about what you're concerned about, and what you want to change as we start a new year. But we're going to start off the show with a piece from a continuing series that I'm featuring on Bread and Roses, on the programs that I host, which is a collection of women talking about what it means to be a woman. The goal of the project is to continue expanding what we mean when we say the word woman, and to realize our similarities and also what makes our particular experiences different when we say, I'm a woman. In November, a woman from Louisiana talked about how being a woman from the South, and particularly being a woman, an African-American woman from the South, had shaped her experiences. If you're interested in either being interviewed or conducting an interview for this series, send me your contact information. Send it here to KBOO and put attention Bread and Roses, and you can write my name on there too. That's Brooke, B-R-O-O-K-E. Or you can send an email to pmnews@kboo.org and put in the subject heading, put Bread and Roses. Well, enough said. So this evening's segment features two women talking about what it means to be a woman. So let's go ahead and listen to what they have to say.
My name's Jenna, and I'm 10. I'm going to be 11 next month, and I'm from Portland, Southeast Portland, and I'm a student in elementary school.
What does it mean to you to be a woman?
It means to stand up for yourself, in my opinion, to be strong or do what you believe is right, and express yourself, like, with your clothes and feelings and emotions.
Anything else that it means to you? Like,
nothing physical, basically.
What do you mean by that?
Like, the way your body looks. Well, it means that, too, in my opinion. And these are the emotional feelings.
My name is Odalis. I am 43 years old. I'm from Cuba. I have been here in Portland, Oregon for 6 years. I work for Multnomah County Department of Community Justice. I work parole and probation. I am a correction technician. I work together with a probation officer trying to supervise the clients in our department to keep our community safe. To be a woman for me is great. I feel very happy to be a woman. I think God gave to us a wonderful capacity, and this capacity is to love the woman know the true love. We love our family. We love our children. I think the woman came to this world to do many things. I think to be a woman, it means for me to be sensitive. To be a woman means elegant, or to enjoy freedom, to have a big heart, to work hard. Sometimes we have very difficult moments in the life. Sometimes it's difficult because when the woman get married, we have a big responsibility. We got on the same time a big responsibility for the family. Sometimes we have to work. We have to work out of the house. We have to work at home. When we arrive from work, we have to take care for our children, for the family. And it's very important for us to keep our, you know, the marriage, to keep our family. And we need to know how to combine all these duty. It's great to know that we have the same rights that men. We can work, we can do anything, and we can work on any position. We can't be in church. That is it's great because it's different than before. I remember, or before I born, was very different, the life for the woman. And every day we can see how it's changing the life for the woman. We can see how many opportunities we have in this world. It's great. The woman can study, can go to work. The woman can go to the world for our country, for other country. It's beautiful to be a woman. I think the woman is like a flower, it's like a rose, and it's very sensitive, it's very sincere, loyalty, but at the same time the woman is very, very strong, because we can work. At the same time, we can take care for our family, for our children. At the same time, we can take care for some time for our parents, some time for sister, or some time for friend. And we have this capacity. We can do many things at the same time, and we can do everything good, fine. And I think it's great, it's beautiful for me to be a woman.
You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO 90.7 FM. Well, you just heard from Odalis, and before her you heard from Jenna about what it means to be a woman. Look for another installment of that series on January 27th. Well, as mentioned, this is a special end of the year What's on Your Mind show, and I think that's sort of been a popular kind of show today. I've been listening to KBOO and other stations, and I guess my idea was not original, but it's still important. Well, so the question is, what do we need to gear up for? What do we need to gear up and fix as we move over into 2006? What things have we let go on too long? What's got swept under the rug? Or what just really concerns us? And what are we going to do about those things? Well, tonight we have recordings from four women, Jenna, Annette, Odalis, and Cynthia, who are going to share their thoughts with you. So we'll go ahead and begin with someone that you heard from just a few minutes ago. We'll start with Jenna.
What is a topic or a couple of topics or issues that are important to you that you think people need to talk about, or things that you'd like to change?
The war on terror, in my opinion, is bad because I know that President Bush thought Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. In my opinion, it was kind of a bad assumption. Well, it was a good thing to try to protect our country from what he's saying, but not to go to war and drop bombs everywhere and stuff. And I wrote a letter to him in second grade, about to stop the war on terror, but he never wrote back to me, so I think he was ignoring me and wanting to continue the war. And I think global warming is another issue, because it's affecting people and animals. People are cutting down trees, and places that are cold are getting warmer climates. Like the North Pole and the South Pole, they're getting warmer, and it's affecting the animals that live there.
Any other topics that you're concerned about?
I think discrimination is probably one, because I don't like the way white people treated black people back in the 60s, and I think they're still doing that now, and I don't like that, because black people are the same as white people. Just because the color of their skin, people are treating them bad. It doesn't make any sense to do that.
So how do you think we can change that?
Someone could give a speech or something. I don't know, basically, but it's just the way people are. They can change on their own. I can't think of a way to stop it.
Do you see it happening in school at all?
Nope. At my school, people... I hardly ever see any bullying. It's probably a good school.
How about global warming? How are we gonna fix that?
Not be as dependent on certain energy sources and use more renewable energy, like, for example, solar power and wind power and stuff like that.
So I understand you've brought a list of women who you admire with you today. Why don't you go ahead and tell us who are the women that you admire?
I thought that Rosa Parks was a strong woman because not giving up her seat on the bus just because of the law that was discrimination, like I talked about for the issue that was going on. And I also did a report on her in second grade, and she was a strong woman, just like one of the things that I put in the definition for what it means to be a woman. And, oh, just a second. Martha Washington, she was the first president's wife, and she was a nurse in the Revolutionary War. And Clara Barton, she founded the Red Cross, which is a place where you give blood, and it's a very important health organization. And she also was a nurse for the Civil War. And Molly Pitcher was a woman who fought on the battlefield for the Revolutionary War. She was very strong. I know that I said I don't like the war, but I admire those people because they were brave and strong. And Susan B. Anthony stood up for what she believed was right, and she was a women's rights activist, and she won women the right to vote. And that's about all I can think of.
And that was Jenna, who is 10 years old, and she told me after we did the interview that, yes, she had been studying some history lately, but it was still just amazing to hear her talk about so many different things and to talk about all those wonderful women. And at this time, I'd like to invite listeners who have any comments about what you've just heard, or if you'd like to tell us what you think is an important area to make change in, to go ahead and give us a call at 503-231-8187. So Jenna talked about the war on terror. She talked about discrimination, global warming. And she also talked about, you know, how can we make a change? And, well, in terms of discrimination, she said maybe we can make a speech. Somebody needs to make a speech. I don't know who that is. And maybe it was Jenna right then. The war on terror, well, she tried to write a letter but didn't get very far. I was thinking about this. I wrote a letter to President Reagan back in the 80s and when I was about 12. And I was feeling overwhelmed by a couple things that were going on. Was that my brother was turning 18 and he was having to register for the draft, or I guess the selective service is what it's called. And also, so I was worried about that. And then I had recently seen the movie The Day After. I don't know if you remember that movie about the sort of nuclear devastation that we were likely to experience at any moment. And so I was really panicked about those two things. I was worried about my brother being taken off to war, whatever war it may be, and also, nuclear bombs. And so I sent a letter to the president telling him how worried I was, because I figured if anybody can help me, it's him, right? If anyone can make all this madness stop, it's him. You know, he's the president. And a few weeks later, I received a piece of mail from the White House, which was not actually a letter from the president, but it was more like something like a newsletter. And I don't remember what it said exactly. I just remember searching it, you know, for some kind of answer, but it was just sort of like this generic response to my sad little cries for help. And but I think we should all be writing President Bush letters on a daily basis right now, flooding that White House with our outcries about the war, about discrimination, global warming, and so much more. So letter writing, making speeches, renewable energy, wind power, apparently. Cynthia, do you have any thoughts?
About energy?
About anything.
Oh, man. I think your thoughts are good ones, Brooke.
All right. Well, we will go ahead and move on then to our next piece. And again, if you have any thoughts on this issue or any issues that are troubling you or that you'd want to talk about, that you want people to start changing, give us a call, 503-231-8187. In the meantime, let's go to our second piece. This is one from a woman whose name is Annette.
My issue that I have is as being an African-American female and woman and just being African-American, period, there's always an issue of race. And thinking about that, it bothers me a lot that we're in 2005 and we still have issues of racism, that black and white is still not as equal as it should be, because we have fought for equality, have fought to make a difference in life and to be treated with respect and dignity. And sometimes that still doesn't happen, because what I notice is that regardless of how much we try to improve on things and situations, that we're still treated worse, lower than Vietnamese, Hispanic people, are any other people of color. And a lot of times we have been here and made the backbone of America and still get treated like we're dirt. And so for me, that bothers me, because when I walked into a school the other day, they were just still talking about segregation. And we're all supposed to be one equally, but I don't see that happening. And you know, it's like in 1800s, it's supposed that people died to change that, and still you walk into a classroom or you walk into a restaurant, you walk into a store, the report has been so negative that when you see a black person, it's like, okay, they're stealing, they're lazy, they're not good for anything. And the more education you get, there's still not enough. It's still something else missing. And so for me, that's an issue, because it's in the heart, and it bothers me a lot, that something that I would like to change, and people understand that I am not dirt. You know, I'm not shiftless and lazy, that, you know, I am a hardworking person that wants better things in life for my children and my family as well, you know. And so that bothers me. And just to think about what happened with Katrina and all the stuff in the South, and how that happened and showed that there's still racism in the world today. And so what I'm saying is that people don't seem to understand that. Oh, they say, oh yeah, they got this, you know, that black people still have this and we got this and we have rights, but we really don't. And so, you know, like I said, the example was when Katrina hit and how long it took for people to come to the aid when we're living right in the country that's supposed to be plentiful and nourishment. When the typhoon hit in over in India, people were there in a couple of days, and it took people days to get to Louisiana to help people because there was nothing there. What I saw was a bunch of black people looking to be helped, and they didn't get that. And so that bothers me that we're still stuck in a time warp. And so I don't know what can I do to change that, but just by doing what I'm doing today, and that's speaking out, talking about the issues, and people really listening to that, because that's not okay. We're not just second-class citizens. I think that to continue to educate people and call people on what, you know, like just really tell more topics about it, and people just need to own that, you know, about maybe they are prejudiced or there's stereotypes that they feel that when black people approach them or people of color, it's like, oh yes, I'm afraid because of what the media has created or things stereotype, because all they got good people and bad people in all races, but people focus more on African American races than they do any other race about crime rate. Just like when that man talked about if you aborted all black babies, the crime rate would go down. That's an insult to being an African American, just to think that if you got rid of us, crime would go down. You know, and I was really insulted by that. That here, this man was the former head of education, and this is what he thought about us as a people. People want to hold us accountable. You know, they want to say, you need to do this and you need to do that differently. And people need to think about how they do things when they talk to us as well. You know, so that's just how I think. That's an issue to me.
And that was Annette talking about the prevalence of racism being an issue that she's worried about. And we're going to go to a quick music break and we'll be back.
Still living. Oh, in this crazy, crazy world that I'm still living. With all the problems of the day, how can we go on? Hey. So tired.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Bread and Roses, KBOO's Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm your host, Brooke Kavanaugh. Again, tonight's program is a special about what's on your mind, what's an issue that is important to you that you'd like to see change in the next year as we go into the new year. And before the music break, we heard from Annette, who was talking about the prevalence of racism. And if you have any comments about what you've heard or you want to call in and talk to us, do give us a call at 231-8187. And so in terms of racism, you know, think about what Annette said. I mean, have things really improved when we talk about racism? Are they there just in a different, more, I don't know, fancier packaging now? And what are you doing to make things better? Annette mentioned, you know, continuing on with dialogue, but also holding people accountable so that the racist comments, whether intended or not, are those aren't allowed to slide. And she also mentioned, I believe it was former Secretary of Education, William Bennett, I believe was his name, who made that comment about aborting black children and how that would bring down the crime rate. And that was just a few months ago. And also just really checking yourself, you know, whatever race or cultural background you are, asking yourself what's really running through your mind when you see, hear, or interact with a person whose cultural background or race is different from yours. And my engineer, not mine, but the engineer, Molly, is making motions to me as if we might have a caller. So is there a caller?
Hello. Am I on?
You are. Welcome.
Well, your last caller got me very interested. I think that the racism and discrimination has certainly made people of color bear an unfair portion of the burden.
Mm-hmm.
But Katrina brought to my attention that there is poverty and hunger and homelessness all over this nation and has been. And it's not just during a catastrophe. It's day in and day out, year after year. And the things that used to help these people, benefits in health, welfare, and education, have been cut because of the war. And it just drives me crazy that these cuts in benefits are making these really substandard living conditions for many U.S. citizens get worse and worse instead of better and better. And I know people of color bear more than their burden, but there's homes of many races and working class people where someone in the home is actually working and they've got overextended credits because their income just doesn't match their bills. And they get deeper and deeper under. And, yes, I'm very concerned about all of that. Was that a long sentence?
That was great. Thank you for contributing. Any thoughts on what we can do?
Well, what we need to do is to support the movements, the grassroots movements, and all the protests and all the demonstrations, and exercise our people power to see that we stop the war and return the monies to the state of Oregon that's been going for the war and the military to the health, welfare, and education programs. And they're too numerous to mention on this program, but the money, the cuts have been terrible. It's not enough to return to where they were before the war, but they needed to be increased, not decreased, during these very critical times of the cost of living rising faster than the minimum wage, which is not adequate.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your call. Very well put.
And thank you for letting me say all I had to say. I'll feel better today.
Oh, good.
And thank you for your program.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, the caller makes a really good point. It's so hard to even get by these days. You know, there's so much poverty, but even people who are working, sometimes they don't have a living wage. And you know, they have children and, they can't pay for everything with that wage. So talking about raising wages and you know, expecting that people should be paid fairly. All right. So I think we're going to go ahead and go to our next piece, which is from Odalis, I should say, the woman who spoke in the beginning about what it means to be a woman. And what you're about to hear are Odalis's hopes for the future.
I would like to see maybe in the future, in the next year, will be maybe a fantasy, but maybe in the future I would like to see more integration in our community. When I talk about integration, I mean to see the diversity, to see the people, American people, people from other cultures, Hispanic, Asian, working together, working in peace for our community. That will take many years, but will be excellent to be or to see that happen, because this country, United States, the people that we live here, we came from different part of the world, and is for me is excellent, for me is great, for me is very nice. Sometimes when you can see people from different country, from different culture, you can visit restaurant, Vietnamese restaurant, you can visit Mexican restaurant, Cuban restaurant, American restaurant. It's beautiful to see this integration in this country, United States. The people came here to find a better life, because you want to live better, better, better every day. And we came here for that, to work, to help our family is in different country. So one of the things that I would like to see in the future is the more integration in our community, to see our community, the diversity, the cultural diversity, working together for our children, working together for our young people. We have a big problem. I see a big problem that we have here, and we have to work. It's the problem with the drug. We have many young people taking drug, and this is very it's bad. This is very bad for our society, because the children and the young people is the people for the future, that we have to work for the future, and we need strong people. We need clean people to go ahead with our country, with our society, with and other thing I would like to see the school. I would like to see the school maybe with more resort. I have a daughter. She's in the school. She's in third grade. And sometimes the parents, we have to help a lot the school with many things, with money, because the school needs money. So I would like to see in the future that the state or the government giving enough money for the school to keep our children with all that they need in the school, because it's very, very important. The education is one of the first things for the people. And the other thing very important for me is the health. One is the education and the other is the health. We have too many people without health insurance in this country. I'm talking about the country, but okay, the community, our community here in Portland, Oregon. But in our country, too, we have many people without insurance, health insurance. Sometimes they are children. It's very difficult for these people. I was one of these people in the past. I got sick without insurance, and it was very difficult for me to pay it later because it's expensive. So one of the other things I would like to see in the future is to see all our children, all our young people, old people, everybody with health insurance, with health cover, to see our community clean of drug, to see our community clean of alcohol, because it's other problem that we have sometimes in our community. I think our community is great. We have nice thing here. This city is beautiful city. This state is a beautiful state. The nature in our country, in our state is beautiful. I enjoy a lot the different season in Portland. The spring, the summer is beautiful. The fall, the winter. And I think because we have this special condition in our weather, and we have this beautiful city, is the city of the Rose, and we have this great state, we can do more. We can do more for our community, and we can work together for our children, our young people, old. I think when I arrived here to United States 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago, I arrived here with my husband and my daughter in February 1999, I remember, and I saw the city different than today. I was looking the city clean, very clean, no many unemployment people, no many homeless on the street. But after 7 years and looking the street, I saw more homeless, more unemployment. It's sad. That is sad. And so I think I would like to see, you know, everything good for the community, good for our people. And to live in peace, that is other thing. To live in peace with us, with God, with other country. It's very important to live in peace, because without peace, we can do nothing. Without peace, we can be happy. So it's very important for me to see in the future, in the next year, to live in a world in peace, without war.
And you were just hearing from Odalis, a woman who had many things on her mind. And if you've got something on your mind, something you want to call and talk to us about, something you think is an important issue that, you know, needs some attention, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So Odalis talked about many things. She talked about integration and celebrating diversity. And it's interesting that the three women that I recorded, Jenna, Annette, and Odalis, that they all talked about, you know, basically diversity or accepting people of other cultures as an important issue for them. So I think that's worthy of taking a note and really paying attention to what you're doing, what you're seeing, and what you're hearing out in the community. She also talked about proper funding for education, which is the continuing battle here in Oregon, and also health insurance for everybody, and how she herself got health insurance and having to pay that horrendous medical bill. And that's something that I've also experienced, not paying the horrendous medical bill, but being uninsured, because it's very uncommon now to find, at least in my particular line of work, which is teaching, at the community college, it's difficult to find, insurance for part-time teachers. And, let's see, she also spoke about taking care of our community. She's noticed some changes in Portland. Seems like she's seeing more homeless and more unemployment, and that we really need to come together and work together as a community and take care of our city. And finally, that we need to live in peace without this horrible war that is going on. So thank you to Odalis for contributing that piece for us. And also thank you to her daughter, whose name is also Odalis, for being so patient as her mother was interviewed here at the studio. All right. Well, we are going to go, unless, I don't know, is there anything that's on your mind, Cynthia? I have a couple of in-studio guests who are here to support me, but have not been saying much. And I appreciate their support. But is there anything that's on your mind, Cynthia?
Well, I think what's on my mind is the vast amount of things that are on everyone's mind, and how to keep it all straight, and how to not get overwhelmed and stay grounded. So to me, there's either an on or off switch. The on switch is, oh my God, everything, name something, education, environment, racism, everything. Or off switch, I'm going to take a bath and drink some bourbon. Like, is there an in-between? Do any callers have any comments on that? Because it's hard. And then it's hard when you're on the on switch to, like, figure out what to do first or to do anything. And so the result is to hit the off switch and, you know.
Yeah, and I think sometimes even when you are doing things that you are working towards change, you don't necessarily see results. You know, you put out a lot of effort a lot of times, and sometimes you don't see any change right away. But you know, when we're talking about the on switch, but you know, you know, making your voice heard, writing letters, going out to protests, you know, you may think that it's a little thing, but it does matter. And but there are also times when you need to kind of step back and not be overwhelmed by everything that's going on. I agree. So, all right, well, we are going to switch topics a little bit. Something that's been in the spotlight lately, especially with the stalling over Bush's Patriot Act, but it's really a problem that's all too familiar and it's gone on for years and years and years. Oh, hold on. We have a caller, and I'll get back to that in 1 second. Go ahead, caller.
I guess that's probably me.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been working on trying to keep a couple, maybe several thousand dollars more per year in the pockets of cable listeners who still use automobiles. And I've been working with the city on that, as well as ODOT. And Lisa Loving and Kathleen Stevenson have a lot of the information, providing hope for insurance, hope for a more secure roof over our heads, hope for more dependable transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see some of this information that Lisa Loving and Kathleen Stevenson have on hand get some airtime. I can tell you in terms of the ODOT program what it is, the title of it, so that you can ask them.
Okay.
This year, the Oregon Department of Transportation adopted a rule providing for the optional titling of vehicles that are not required to be titled, like your personal use vehicles. Now, the DMV may take your money and issue those documents if you wish to support their program. But once you support their program, you also have to pay motor vehicle fuel tax, parking meters, and everything else. So if we don't choose and we need to keep the $2,000 or $3,000 extra in our own pockets, those costs will be borne by motor vehicle operators who are granted the privilege to do business on the highway. I know this is kind of a...
I'm trying to wrap my head around this.
It's an amazing concept.
Uh-huh.
But motor vehicle operators are granted the privilege and have to pay $2,000 or $3,000 extra dollars per year to do the same, to go the same distance that the general public goes in their vehicles as a matter of right. Our current law makes a clear distinction between those who are granted the privilege to use the highway and make a living on it, and the general public, who has always had the right to use the highway to go to the doctor and pick up their kids after school and visit grandma on the holidays.
Hmm. And so this is information that you've given to Lisa Loving and Kathleen Stevenson?
Yes, they have a good deal of information about it. There's also a lot of information available from Tom Potter's office.
Okay.
We just, the Committee for the Appropriate Enforcement of Motor Vehicle Laws just gave him a certificate of appreciation a couple weeks ago. His attorneys, the city attorneys, found that there is no law that subjects the public to the motor vehicle laws or to the same provisions of law as motor vehicle operators. So, so we gave him a certificate of appreciation down at City Council.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. I'm going to have to stop you there because we've got to move on, but thank you very much for calling in.
Anybody that needs a couple extra thousand per year.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Well, now, getting back to, and thank you to that caller, although I'm still not totally sure that I understand. Anyway, so a topic that's been in the spotlight lately, but it's come back into focus with... I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. Privacy. The issue is privacy. And when the Patriot Act started stalling and it's been extended and what's going to happen with it, well, the question is, what kind of freedom is it that we really have and that we're trying to force upon other nations? Well, this is a song by Jill Scott that describes how in our fancy age of modern technology that trying to survive as a private individual is getting scarier and scarier, and that freedom is in serious question.
Drugs coming into my community, weapons coming into my community, dirty cops in my community, and you keep saying that I'm free, and you keep saying that I'm free, and you keep saying that I'm free.
And that was a song by Jill Scott called Watching Me. And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. It's Bread and Roses. And we are moving into our last piece for this evening. We've been talking about issues that are important, issues, things we've been thinking about, things that need to be addressed as we go into the new year, and just what's been on women's minds. So in our last piece, we hear from Cynthia, who, as luck would have it, is here in the studio. And for this piece, Cynthia grabbed her microphone and went and talked to some friends about a topic that, from time to time during the year, would have a screaming headline in the newspaper. And it made some people panic, and it made other people just shrug their shoulders. So, without further ado, here's the piece from Cynthia.
I've been morbidly obsessed with the spread of the bird flu in humans this year. The main point I keep remembering is that it's poised to become another pandemic, and many science types consider it a real threat. Since we probably won't get any help from the government, I thought I'd ask a few of my friends about it and see what they were planning to do, how they were going to get ready and take care of their people in case bird flu spread around the world and reached us here in Portland, Oregon.
So let's say that the bird flu pandemic hits Portland. What would you do to take care of yourself and the people around you?
I would stay inside, and I would stop feeding the birds, and I would adopt more cats from the Humane Society.
But seriously, what do you think would happen if the pandemic hit Portland? What do you imagine?
I don't know that much about it, but I understand that it comes from birds and it moves fast and it's lethal. So I don't think there'd be much time to do anything. So I'd probably just do things the same.
I was feeling really passionate about bird flu preparedness, so it was kind of a shock to discover that my friends weren't really thinking about it. I tried hard to scare them into being serious, but it didn't work very well.
I think people should prevent getting the flu, even the regular flu. And I can't remember why that is.
But what are you going to do? So, like,
I don't know.
So here's the newscast. Bird flu's coming across Idaho, and it's going to come to Portland. You know, it's moving across the states.
I might pick up some masks and some latex gloves and not make a lot of human contact. And,
Would you kind of check in with your other friends or your ex-wife, mother, your child, or
sure,
anything like that?
Sure, I'd probably call them.
What do you envision happening around you if this happened? Do you think people would just stay inside, or they'd be mean to each other, or what?
I don't really know. You know, I guess if a lot of people start dying, it could get kind of weird. I mean, I think it could be pretty awful, and I think people might react in a real negative way.
I sort of envision something like nuclear bomb preparedness meets Mount St. Helens meets the Millennium. I'm not allowed to read any more about the bird flu since I was reading about it almost daily online and in magazines. I thought it was really scary to imagine the hysteria that might emerge if the bird flu came to Portland and people weren't ready. I imagine the darker side of human nature emerging in the chaos, people fighting over food and water. I figured if we plan for the bird flu, it won't be so ugly when it actually gets here.
I will, first of all, if I know it's showing up, I will shore up a lot of food and water in my own house and kind of talk to my roommate about how we can live in the house, and us and the animals. There's three dogs and two cats and four chickens. Then I will make sure that I know kind of all my friends' plans to know that no one's kind of left out on their own, because I would hate that. So if I had a friend that didn't have a place to stay that seemed safe or something, they would come to my house and live with us.
Would you stay inside more often?
I'd probably stay inside, definitely.
With the chickens.
I don't know what we do with the chickens.
I think you need to turn them in, from what I've read.
That's all well and good, except we don't really know what way to prepare. Is it better to go around with a mask and latex gloves, or hide out at home with canned food? The virus is supposed to eventually be able to morph so that it can spread from human to human, just like the regular flu. I'm upset about the possibility of lots of people dying from the flu, but most upset about the evil behavior that I'm projecting. All I wanted was to hear that people were thinking about it and taking it a little seriously. Maybe it's futile to expect people to get ready for anything. Maybe the scary human nature scenarios are more about my own psyche. Maybe we just need to throw a chicken party.
My friend Anne was going to go to Asia and during the chicken flu there. The bird flu, I guess it was, wasn't it? But she couldn't eat the chicken there, she knew. And so beforehand, and they're supposed to have mad good chicken there, because they have like free range chicken at their house.
Fresh.
Yeah, fresh. It's supposed to be good. And so she had a big fat chicken party at her house, and everyone brought different kinds of chicken. And we brought nuggets from McDonald's, lots. At least a 20-piece, maybe more, and they were gone. And there was the turducken.
What's a turducken?
Turkey and duck and chicken stuffed inside each other. No bones, curiously. The end.
Honestly, the only thing I've done to prepare is store water in jugs and locate some old latex gloves. I don't know what I will actually do if the bird flu arrives here, and I think it might be a little bit like a nightmare coming true, but the kind whose ending you can control somewhat. I will definitely not be eating turducken anytime soon.
She went to college, studied anatomy. I told her from the butchery. We got to get it, it was cool. What was my magenta, the other was a blue.
I know my chicken. You got to know your chicken. I know my chicken. You got to know your chicken.
And that was a piece about the bird flu by Cynthia. And we've come to the end of our show, and I want to thank all the women who participated in the interviews for tonight's program about issues that are on your mind. We had Jenna, Odalis, Annette, and Cynthia. And also I want to thank Jenna's mom and Odalis' daughter for coming into the studio. And special thanks to Cynthia for putting that piece together for us. And thanks to Cynthia and Cheyenne for being in the studio with me. And thanks to engineer Molly for making the show possible. And thanks to you listeners for tuning in. And we leave you tonight with a song chosen by Jenna and her mom that they like to rock out to. It's Sleater-Kinney. Have a good new year.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar for December 30th, 2005. Portland's Children's Museum's Imagination Theater presents Puppet Theater with Penny Walter. Today they'll be playing The Mitten. The Mitten will be showing at 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Admission is $7. Seating in Imagination Theater is limited. Please arrive early. The Portland Children's Museum is located at 4015 Southwest Canyon Road. For more info, call 503-223-6500. The Oregon Renaissance Band presents a concert of Renaissance music from Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, played on a wide variety of period instruments. 12 musicians will be playing recorders, sackbuts, violins, harp, and they will be singing and more. Tonight, Friday, December 30th at 7:30 p.m., located at the All Saints Episcopal Church on 4033 Southeast Woodstock. $10 general admission, $8 students and seniors. This is available at the door only. For more info, call 503-631-2973. Food Not Bombs every Friday at 5:30 p.m. Colonel Sumner's Park, Southeast Taylor and 18th. Ride in celebration of bikes, bicyclists, bicyclist rides on the road, and non-car transportation with critical mass in Corvallis. Meeting time is at 4:30 p.m. at the Central Park on Monroe in Corvallis, Oregon. City Repairs invites you and your community to propose a project for the 2006 Village Building Convergence. Projects can be place-oriented, ecological, artistic, structural, social, even alive. The main goal is to permit cooperative community-based efforts to reconnect with each other and enhance the places we live. Details on previous projects, the proposal process, and request for proposals online at www.cityrepair.org or at City Repair Headquarters, 2122 Southeast Division. Their phone number is 503-235-8946. Thanks for listening to the KBOO Community Calendar for December 30th. You're listening to KBOO in Corvallis, Hood River, and Portland.